This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
From the Quicken Loans Studios in Houston, Texas. Quicken Loans. Take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today. Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back to hour number two at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, the next generation of sports radio. And that's right, we are inside the Quicken Loans Studios, and we're going to open up hour number two with some NFL news and notes. And how about the Atlanta Falcons, their new offensive coordinator, Steve Sarkisian, a very bold move made by the Falcons. And I have to tell you what, I was totally shocked. I was completely surprised. And so I'm going to reach out to my guy, Steve Bortstein, from Fox Sports New Mexico, who's joining us on the Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. Good evening, Steve. Nice to have you back.
Nice to be back, Alyssa. Thank you.
Okay, so let's talk about this innovative offensive guy, this offensive guru in Steve Sarkisian. He's left the college ranks, and now he is headed to the NFL. Why did Dan Quinn believe he was the right guy, to lead the Falcons offensively?
I'm assuming it's because he's not going to have to change that much. I think there was an assumption here that, like we see with other offensive coordinators that come in and change an offense around. This offense is very good. I mean, I know they had the meltdown in Super Bowl 51, but I don't think this offense requires a lot of changing. I don't think it requires a major overhaul. I think Steve Sarkisian understands that kind of offense. He obviously worked with Dan Quinn for a time when they were both, working with Pete Carroll back in the day. So I think there is some history there. I think that, again, I don't think this is going to require a massive overhaul on their offense. Obviously, they have a lot of talent on that offense. Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, the very talented backfield. They've got a lot of other good receivers there. So I don't think it required a lot of tinkering. What I think is more, I guess disturbing in a way is, Steve Sarkisian, you can argue, is coming off as much of an offensive meltdown in the Alabama loss to Clemson,
right,
as the Atlanta Falcons did in Super Bowl 51
exactly,
against the New England Patriots.
Absolutely. So, but tell me this. When you look at the Falcons, season to season, will they continue to remain committed to the offensive system that Kyle Shanahan had in place, or do you see him changing up some things?
There's always going to be a few things that'll change. Whenever you bring in a new offensive coordinator, obviously there's going to be, a lot of terminology might change. A lot of ways they call plays might be changed. But, let's face it, this was the highest scoring offense in the NFL for a reason. They have the talent there. So I don't think it's going to require that much tinkering. And again, I think it's an offense that Steve Sarkisian, on his best day, will have fun, kind of working with that offense and working with the schemes on that offense there. I guess the part of it that bothers me a little bit, and this is, not the joking part with the Alabama comparison,
but
he had one game as offensive coordinator for Alabama, one game. He came in after the weird, just bizarre dismissal there of Lane Kiffin after he decided to take a job at a university that most people hadn't even heard of until 3 weeks ago. So you have then Sarkisian takes over for the championship game. They lose that game in epic fashion. And now all of a sudden he gets rewarded with that, with the job at Atlanta. And I don't know that there wasn't maybe some problems between Saban and Sarkisian. I'm sure Saban was unhappy with the way that game unfolded and the way that game ended against Clemson. So maybe it was just a move on both sides, and it's a way to save face a little bit for both Alabama and Sarkisian. It's an interesting move. You said at the top here, Alyssa, that it was a move that kind of came out of left field. It kind of came out of nowhere. What also bothers me a little bit, and it's going to be an issue that is going to come up, obviously, in press conferences, and if, God forbid, something does happen, So Dan Quinn went on record at the day of the announcement that Steve Sarkisian was coming on board that, you know, they went through and did all the backstories on Steve Sarkisian. Obviously, he had his issues with alcoholism and addiction issues at Washington. Those came out full bore, obviously, upon his dismissal later on at USC. And it was also a storyline when they hired him at the University of Alabama. When Dan Quinn talked about that, they said, yeah, we went through the backstory and we're fine. We think he's okay. And then the very next day, Steve Sarkisian, in his introductory press conference, talked about, no, it's not something that it's over. I mean, alcoholism, any sort of addiction, Alyssa, you've dealt with people who deal with addictions every day. It's never over. You never fully recover. It's not like going in for surgery for a broken ankle. It's something that you never fully recover from. So, you know, we all want the best for Steve Sarkisian. I do. I'm sure everyone does. But if something bad happens to him, this is going to fall on Dan Quinn. This is going to fall on his shoulders, and it's going to fall on Arthur Blank. And it's something that could really, really be a problem down the road if, in fact, it's not monitored. And if, in fact, he does fall back, then you have bigger issues, even more so than how he's going to run an offense, you know, that's that talented.
Steve Borstein of Fox Sports New Mexico joining us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Steve is joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. Okay, as we talk about Steve Sarkisian, you talked about some of the concerns that you have. You know, he's only coached one game at Alabama. That was in the national title game. But I think about, full disclosure here, Steve, I mean, my biggest concern is, you know, Sarkisian has coached in the NFL, one season in 2004, working with the quarterbacks. He was the quarterbacks coach for the Raiders, and that has been a long, long time ago. How do you see him making this transition with, you know, an offensive juggernaut when you talk about the Falcons?
It's a great point. You know, I mean, it's been, you know, what's it been, 13 years. I couldn't even tell you who the quarterback was of the Oakland Raiders back in 2004. It's a time in their past I'm sure they'd rather forget, too, over in Oakland. But, you know, I don't think you lose sight of, you know, the game itself. I mean, don't forget, he did have the seasons out of Washington where he was the head coach there, and he was pretty much involved in that offense, which was very good. When he was up at Washington, and then he had the season at USC, you know, where he's had some talented players around him. I don't think you ever forget the game. I think sometimes you're victimized by the talent around you. So I don't think that's going to be so much the issue. I think, you know, again, I'm more concerned about the pressure aspect of it, not what he's learned and what he has to relearn.
Sure.
I'm just more concerned about the pressure aspect of it. And if in fact that pressure, you know, gets to him in an emotional way where the addiction issue comes back up. And, you know, that's something that obviously doesn't show in the X's and O's on the field necessarily, but it could show in how that offense is running. It could show in how that team is running. It could show, you know, in player behavior. I mean, I think it'll be interesting early on to see how united this team is when they come back. Look, we saw the effect that losing a Super Bowl had on Carolina this year. We saw what effect it had. That team was disjointed. The coaching staff was disjointed in Carolina, and they were coming off a devastating Super Bowl loss at the hands of the Denver Broncos. This one, I would argue, for Atlanta was 1,000 times more devastating for them. They were at a 25-point lead at one point in the third quarter of that Super Bowl and blew it. So I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this team, all of them, Dan Quinn, Steve Sarkisian, the new defensive line coach, the new, you know, all the new coaches there, how they all function, I think will be seen early on in that 2017 season coming up in September.
How do you think the Falcons have come to terms and to grips with, you know, squandering that 25-point lead?
I don't think you ever come to terms with it. I mean, ask Cam Newton how he's come to terms with it. Mm-hmm. Ask Ron Rivera. Ask Luke Kuechly. I don't think you ever come to terms with that. That was a game. I mean, I know the Carolina loss was more emphatic against Denver, but remember, they were supposed to win that game. I mean, that was a game that clearly they were supposed to win, and they didn't. And here you have, you know, Atlanta with this unbelievable offense. They get out to that 28-3 lead. People are turning the game off. People are thinking it's over. And suddenly there's Tom Brady, you know, hoisting a trophy over his head. So I don't know if you ever get over something like that. There's no textbook that says here's how you get over a Super Bowl loss, turn to page 212. That doesn't exist. So I think it's going to be very interesting. There's always that Super Bowl hangover effect you hear so much about. And I'm not using that term because of Steve Sarkisian. There's no pun intended there. But,
yeah.
but there's always that, you know, there is always that Super Bowl hangover thing you can get into. And it's a real thing. I mean, if you can ask a lot of teams, you know, how did you get over a loss in the Super Bowl? I don't think you ever do.
Our NFL news and notes will continue with Fox Sports' Steve Borstein after this quick timeout right here at SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. That's right, we're going to continue our NFL news and notes conversation. We are continuing a recap of Super Bowl 51 with Steve Borstein from Fox Sports. So as we do a recap of Super Bowl 51, let me ask you this, Steve. I mean, are the Patriots, are they that good, or did the Falcons choke? What's your definition of a choke?
Definition of a choke is a team that gives away a 25-point lead. But we've seen teams, you know, fold in the fourth quarter after like a four-touchdown lead. They don't lose the game. You know, they just give up a couple of late touchdowns. Instead of a 20-point win, they win by seven. Okay, that's kind of a choke. But in order for this to happen, it has to be a collapse of epic proportion and the comeback of epic proportion. You can't have one without the other. So to dismiss it simply as a choke takes away from what New England did. And to dismiss it simply as the greatest comeback, then you have to sort of forget that Atlanta had this big lead and blew it. So it's a combination of both. And the only, as far as them, you know, their standing and what have you, the only thing I know is this. There is no more discussion. There's no more who belongs on the Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks. This conversation is over because Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback ever to play the game. And it's indicated by four Super Bowl MVP trophies and the fact that his MVP, really, other than Tom Brady being the official MVP of the game, was a guy named James White. I don't think there's any discussion anymore about the greatest quarterback thing. You can tell me all you want about Joe Montana. You can tell me all you want about John Elway. Name your quarterback. It doesn't matter. This conversation ended when he completes passes in Super Bowls to guys named Shane Vereen, Danny Woodhead, and James White, and they're contributing in Super Bowls. And these are guys who are not supposed to be MVP-type performances in Super Bowls.
Okay, just out of curiosity, I mean, what was your pick going into that game? And as we step back, we digest, you know, what really took place. What do you think you learned from that?
I always thought New England was going to win. And what I always take away from whenever I watch New England play is, in this day and age of dynasties, this is probably the greatest dynasty ever because these are not household names. You expect Atlanta to put up the points they did. They have Julio Jones. They have Matt Ryan. They have guys who are banking millions and millions of dollars. They have high contract guys. Again, James White won a Super Bowl for the New England Patriots, James White, Martellus Bennett. Wow. This was a team that was decimated by injuries and guys who were cast off, you know, the Chris Hogan. These are the guys who are winning Super Bowls. In this day and age of dynasties, this may be the single greatest one ever because it's done with guys who are just regular athletes. They're regular football players. They're not multimillionaire guys. And we've seen it before. We've seen it from Bill Belichick. We've seen it from Bob Kraft. If you don't fit that profile, and if you are a guy who's going to demand a lot of money, and if you're a guy who's going to hold out on contracts, you're gone because they don't need those guys. They're going to make do with the talent they have on that roster. They're going to find the next, you know, they go into that term, next man up. And that is the personification of New England.
You ever seen a team make an in-game adjustment like the Patriots and really make such a massive turnaround? What do you think was the key adjustment, Steve?
I think the key adjustment was fixing the offensive line in the second half because clearly, you know, they were, I mean, Tom Brady was getting beat up like a pincushion in the first half. And then in the second half, he found time. And I think it was more of this decision, okay, the running game's not working. Let's just abandon that completely. And by the time they got to the second half and they went down 28-3, I think it was just, okay, protect Brady. I mean, he threw 62 passes in that game. And that, I think that's the adjustment right there, was the commitment to better blocking schemes, the commitment to more crossing routes, which obviously, you know, kept Atlanta's defense on the field. And I think that was also key, was instead of going for these 30, 40-yard pass routes, these deep routes, we're just going to beat you over the middle. We're going to beat you with short routes. We're going to keep your defense on the field. And essentially, we're just going to keep you out there and tire you out. And I also think, and this is no fault of the Atlanta Falcons, I do think that there's a little bit of validity to the claim that when the Atlanta offense wasn't on the field for over an hour, remember, New England had that drive at the end of the first half,
right.
And then they had the Lady Gaga concert, which went on forever, and then you have the second half, and New England starts off with Atlanta doesn't do much on their first drive. I think they were out of sorts a little bit. Now, they did score a touchdown. They got back into sorts. But I think if that Atlanta Falcons second half first drive, if they had gotten the touchdown on that drive or at least a field goal on that drive, I think then things would have been really, really bad for New England at that point. But I think they felt like, okay, we've had some time off. They're a little bit rusty right now. Take advantage of this when you can.
Hey, Steve Bortstein is with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You know, we talk so much about the New England Patriots winning it all, Super Bowl 51. But let's zero in and talk some more about the Falcons and their quarterback in Matt Ryan. He is named the MVP of the NFL. But the Falcons, what I'm hearing is that they're saying they want to pay him more money. What do you think? Do you think that's a good idea? Do they need to give, you know, the quarterback, Matt Ryan, some more money?
Considering what's out there, yes. I mean, there's not a lot of – I mean, the unknown factor is not something that I think they want to go to right now.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you go with an unknown Jimmy Garoppolo. Do you go with an unknown, you know, any quarterback? Name any quarterback on any team. Or do you go with an unknown Trevor Siemian or a Paxton Lynch? I think a lot of people are jaded by the success we saw from Dak Prescott in Dallas, that any rookie can just come on in and take over a team. That doesn't work that way. More often than not, they wind up being Jared Goff with the Rams. What a disastrous rookie campaign. So I don't think you want to go that direction. And Matt Ryan's earned it. I mean, he had a phenomenal, season. He was protected by a good offensive line. And that's a good football team. And they can still win that division, that NFC South, with the exception of Carolina, who I do believe will bounce back a little bit next year. But that NFC South is a division in flux. Tampa Bay is still kind of building, I think, right now. New Orleans, I think they've jumped the shark a little bit. I mean, Drew Brees isn't getting any younger,
mm-hmm.
So I don't really see much from them. So I think Atlanta is in a very good position to once again dominate perhaps in that NFC South. So why mess with a good thing? And again, that goes to the Steve Sarkisian thing. It would be one thing if Steve Sarkisian was coming in and, here, we're going to throw you a brand-new quarterback. Then Steve Sarkisian, if he isn't hitting the bottle by that point, I don't know what would do it for him. But I think you keep Matt Ryan simply just for the continuation factor, just to keep a regular steady rhythm there with that offense.
You know, I think back a year ago, what they were 8-8, and I want to talk to you about this, Steve. I mean, how were they able to make such an incredible turnaround in 2016?
They picked up a couple of good offensive linemen. They were very fortunate to pick up some strong offensive line help. I think that was an issue. I think Carolina falling apart the way they did. Atlanta committing themselves to their offensive line. I think Arizona falling apart the way they did. No one expected, I think, them to have the poor season they had. And Atlanta took advantage of a system that worked for them, and things just fell into place. Plus, when you've got a receiving core, forget Julio Jones for a second. You have Austin Cooper, who really came on the second half of the season for the Falcons in the tight end position. Mohamed Sanu, again, the running back combination. All that talk we had a couple of years ago, well, the running backs really don't matter anymore. Really? Tell that to Tevin Coleman and Devonta Freeman, who had a phenomenal year, I mean, this past season. Obviously, the running game is still very vital, and I think the running game is very important. Running backs matter, right? And I know that, you know, we had that whole thing about, well, the running backs are being more phased out for these more high-tempo, up-tempo offenses. But you still need that running game. Even just for play-action purposes, you need to have talented running backs who are going to at least, you know, make defenses honest against the run or the pass.
The host of First Sports, you can check him out, Fox Sports 1340 AM. Steve Bortstein has been with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Some great stuff a very nice recap of Super Bowl 51. Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate you.
My pleasure. Anytime.
You bet. Much more come your way in hour number two at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. You stay close.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Of course, all of our guests, as a reminder, they are joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line, comparing rates to help you save. Now, that is Progressive. So we're here in Houston, Super Bowl 51. It is in the rearview mirror, and it is time to talk about what is going to be ahead for the Dallas Cowboys. Also, what is going to be ahead for the Texans. So we are delighted. We have extended an invitation to the host of DFW Sports Beat. He is amazing. We love when he's on the show. That is Brady Tinker. Good evening.
Hi, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great and very excited to talk about the Cowboys with you. But first and foremost, give us your take on that historic comeback by the Patriots. It was a comeback for the ages.
Yeah, I was down there. And first off, I want to just say that I, you know, there is this Houston hates Dallas, Dallas hates Houston thing, which I'm not a part of because while I've been here 25, almost 30 years in Dallas, I grew up in Kansas City, so I've never genuinely understood it. And I asked, actually asked a lot of people while I was there, while we were doing interviews, you know, like, trying to explain it to me, and nobody really could. Everybody just sort of knows that it's there. But boy, was I impressed with what the city did. We were obviously all over downtown. We were in the suburbs for different parties, and everywhere that we went, it just seemed like it went great. The NFL, obviously. Yeah. Is always on top of everything, but you know, it just seemed to all go good. Now having good weather certainly helps, but I just thought the city just did fantastic. The people were great. Everything that we went to was just highly successful, and the vibe was wonderful.
Well, and hopefully it won't take another 13 years before the Super Bowl comes on back down to Houston, right?
Well, I would think, you know, I think that the things are affected by how things go, you know. I remember being in Houston 13 or 14 years ago when you guys had it before, but I was younger. I didn't stay very long, so I don't really have a reference point as to how that one went. But I know, you know, the Super Bowl they had in Dallas a few years back here, we got an ice storm. So I think it's going to be a while before Dallas gets another chance. But I would certainly think the way the city handled everything and everything that I've heard, another Super Bowl will be back there certainly much faster than that.
Brady Tinker of DFW Sports Beat is with us tonight at SB Nation Radio. And, you know, Brady, throughout the years, you have covered a lot of different events and sports. What do you think you learned from watching that historic and, I would say, inspirational comeback by the Patriots?
Well, I mean, I don't necessarily understand the hate for the Patriots. I have a little angst when it comes to the conversations about, well, Tom Brady did all this to thumb his nose at the NFL or the commissioner or whatever it would be. And I don't really enjoy the conversations of, isn't it amazing what he's doing with all that's happened to him? First of all, whatever happened to him, he brought on to himself. Whatever's happened to that team in terms of them getting in trouble or losing draft picks or having been accused of cheating, for the most part, from everything we can all tell, it's all been true. On the other hand, I grew up in the era of, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. And I don't really have much of a problem. I think deflated footballs are a traffic ticket in the NFL. So that aside, what the Patriots have done in a salary cap era is nothing short of amazing. And they may be, oh, they definitely are, among the top two or three franchises in terms of dominating a period of time in the history of sport. Because to dominate like they've done in an era when everything the NFL has done is set up so that no one will dominate. Free agency is what it is. The salary cap is what it is. Constant turnover of players from one team to another. Teams constantly having to make impossible decisions about keeping their best players, you know, and being able to pay them or not. It's virtually impossible to be a dominant franchise in the last 15 years in the NFL, and the Patriots have done it. And it's amazing, and they're the best at it, and Belichick's the best, and Brady's the best, period. And what we saw in that game just illustrated all of it. I mean, I'm sure you felt the same way at whatever, at 21-3 at halftime or whatever it was in grave doubt. But certainly at 28-3, we were done. And there was really nothing emanating out of the Patriots that said, hey, hang on, They've got all these big play offensive guys. Wait, no, they really don't. Well, they've got these big – no, they don't. Gronk's not playing. They have no fast wide receivers. There's no way this comeback's happening. And there were people around me. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm interested to see what happens because he's great. But this ain't going to happen. And then it did. And it was, to me, amazing. At no point did I think to myself, man, the Falcons are really screwing this up. Except for – you know, the last time when they got to the 22-yard line, didn't get any points. That was bad, and probably the difference between winning and losing. But other than that, that second half was phenomenal, nearly perfect, and was, you know, it was a tale of two halves, and New England wins again.
Well, Tom Brady is 39 years of age, and he orchestrates the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history to win what is fifth championship in 17 years. And, you know, as you watch him, as you evaluate him, he doesn't even seem like he's slowing down. How much longer does he truly have? I mean, what does your gut tell you?
I don't know. You know, he says he wants to play till he's 45. And, you know, with Peyton and even Favre, and, you know, think back to the great quarterbacks that we've loved and watched, you could see, as Charles Barkley said, Father Time, you know, catching up to them. You could see their legs starting to give, you know, and or their arm, or in Peyton's case, you know, his core. He was such a core thrower that all of a sudden, you know, he didn't have that core strength anymore to be able to fling it. And it was just seemed like it was overnight for Peyton. And maybe that'll happen for Tom. But I haven't seen it. I mean, the flea flicker pass to me, you know, illustrated he just flipped that ball 45 yards. And I've never thought he had the strongest arm in the world. I mean, he has arm strength, but he just, you know, he always throws it in the right spot. It's low when it needs to be low. It's high when it needs to be high. You know, he rarely puts his receivers in harm's way. But that throw on the flea flicker play, he just flipped it.
Mm-hmm.
And it still went 40 yards at age 39. So I'll tell you, doubting him is not something I'm going to sign up to do. So it looks to me like he's got at least another couple of years left, I would say. And he says till he's 45. And at this point, who's going to doubt him?
So let's move ahead. Let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys. Give us an update on Tony Romo's status. And will Jerry Jones, is he going to be able to say, you know, a lot of tears, I'm sure, but will he be saying goodbye to him as a Cowboy?
Well, Tony's status is that his wife is pregnant with their third child.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And they are building their own starting five. And they're thrilled and happy. And he's healthy. And he wants to play football. And so he's gonna. And we've seen this, you know, throughout the years from quarterbacks in their middle 30s who don't think they're finished. Some more famous than this one, but this guy is the most competitive guy that I've probably ever been around in my life. He wants to win at everything, including the walk from the restaurant to the car. So he's not done, and it doesn't have anything to do with anything except he loved to compete. He absolutely loves the team nature of the NFL and football itself, and he absolutely loved to compete. And he feels like, I think, that this was a bad break, you know, and he's not pouty. I thought, you know, in his statement in week 10 or 11, when he basically looked at everybody and said, you know, it's Dak's job, this is Dak's team,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was one of the most, you know, genuinely wonderful team things that anyone probably has ever done. And maybe lots of other people have done it. Maybe it's just because of social media and we know everything that gets said and goes on. But I thought it was great, and I thought it helped propel this team through the end of the season and into the playoffs with, you know, a solidarity of, I'm standing over here if you need me, but I'm backing you and I'm helping you on every play. He's ready to play, and I, you know, we only saw, what, one series in week 17 where he went 4 for 5 and moved the team right down the field for a touchdown, but everyone on that team tells me that in the last 7 or 8 weeks of the season that he was phenomenal, that he was old Tony, looking one way, throwing it another, moving the safeties with his eyes, you know, rolling around, looking healthy, certainly not as slippery as he used to be, and I think those days are behind him, but he's healthy, and he wants to play, and if he wants to play, he'll play. I think that he's going to be a June 6th release. I think there's no good way for the Cowboys to do this financially. As much as Jerry loves him, you know, they could have gotten something for him before the trade deadline, but I don't think they're going to get anything for him now just because of his history of being injured. So there are four teams that seem to be in the forefront, and that is Houston, which I talked to a lot of people in Houston who mm-hmm. said, no, yes, maybe. Kansas City, interestingly enough, Denver, which is the one most people hear about, and then Arizona as well. because there's some question as to whether or not Carson Palmer's coming back or if they want him back. He does look a little bit old.
Brady, we are flat out of time. I wish we had time for two more segments, but we will catch up with you again soon. Thanks so much, Brady.
Oh, always available for you, Alyssa. Thanks very much.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way right here in our final segment at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. And a number of subjects that we're going to hit on in our final segment tonight. Always looking forward to visiting with Adam Grossman. He is the CEO of Block 6 Analytics. We wanted to get his perspective on the Super Bowl 51 ads. What was the real value as millions of viewers turned into such a historic game and that incredible comeback by the Patriots? Good evening, Adam. Nice to have you back.
Great to be here.
Okay, so let's find out about your take on the Super Bowl ads, because obviously the Super Bowl, it is one of the most watched events each and every year, especially after the Patriots, this epic comeback. Were those 30-second ads worth that $5 million hit?
It's a good, very good question. Again, I think it depends a little bit on what the brands were trying to accomplish and what the brands were trying to get out of the commercial. One of the things that ended up being, you know, a lot of brands, particularly in the Super Bowl, tried for some emotional angle, in particular, either humor or, you know, the triumph, the heroic story where somebody, you know, comes from nowhere and becomes successful. The idea of those brands and those resonating with customers, in addition to the large audience, is something that, again, brands are taking a look at. So one of the other things that comes up from a is this worth it perspective is not just the commercials themselves, but the earned media that comes from running these commercials. So what that means is, you know, and you've probably, your listeners heard this if they've listened to your show or listened to other shows, is the idea of, you know, people are talking about the Super Bowl commercials well after the commercial has aired and well before the commercial has aired. The brands are not paying for that, right? That is media that's being generated and brand awareness that's being created without having to do anything outside of those commercials. So, and then on the other side of the equation, you know, it's $5 million is just how much it costs to buy the time. Obviously, there's production costs. That T-Mobile commercial with Justin Bieber and all those celebrities by themselves, I'm sure it costs more than the $5 million. The idea being that value, it's not just in terms of just that one time, you know, that 1 30-second spot. You know, it's hard to say the value just from that spot alone. What you really want to look at is the entire ecosystem around the commercial, both in terms of, you know, what happens in social media, what happens on television, what happens on radio, what happens on newspaper, and then what happens not just after the Super Bowl occurs, but usually the Super Bowl ad becomes a foundation for a brand campaign either throughout the entire year or a significant period of time. And then seeing the lifts in sales or lifts in awareness or lifts in perception around the brand over time can be really valuable.
Well, I was at the game, so I didn't have the opportunity to watch all the Super Bowl ads. So give us, you just mentioned the T-Mobile, but what was the highlight for you, perhaps the best and the worst ad?
The one that got the most attention, and you would probably, you know, it's not necessarily traditionally thought of as an ad, is actually the halftime show itself, right? Where Pepsi was the large sponsor of the halftime show. Mm-hmm. And in terms of what people rated as almost as their favorite part of the Super Bowl outside of the end where they came back in the overtime was the halftime show itself. So that being a, you know, I don't think necessarily you'd consider that a commercial, but, you know, Pepsi paid a significant amount of money and they got, you know, I think they got a pretty strong result from it, given the results that it came in from surveys and awareness scores and all that kind of stuff around the Super Bowl commercial. I do think that some of the celebrity ads can be helpful, in particular with remembering what's going on. The biggest issue that comes up with Super Bowl ads, I mean, do you remember any of the Super Bowl ads that happened from the 2016 Super Bowl? Most people would say no, so the length of recall could be hard to have. So even for the ones that are humorous or ones that are, you know, can create a lot of conversation, that's something that you want to be able to monitor and track over time. Probably the best example of this is the Budweiser commercial, the Bud Light commercial, where, you know, Augustus Busch comes, you know, from, I believe it's from Germany, and then comes to St. Louis, and they show kind of a fictionalized version of the creation of Anheuser-Busch. Well, that got a lot of conversation. And, you know, I don't think people, when they think of traditional Super Bowl commercials, think of that kind of story. But obviously, given what's going on in the political climate, combined with that it is a compelling narrative, combined with the fact that instead of using the usual Clydesdales or animals, Budweiser took a different approach. I think of that, of all the commercials, that probably is the one that will be remembered on a go-forward basis.
Well, Adam, I'll tell you one of my favorites. I'm a big Doxy lover, so I think back to a year ago. Was it the Heinz ketchup one? I can't live without you. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That's a great ad. I think of that often.
Yeah, you usually can't go wrong with animal. I mean, obviously, the Westminster Kennel Club just happened, and you know, you can't go wrong with rumor or any other, you know. Animals are usually a tried-and-true method for getting people's attention.
Sure. Hey, the CEO of Block 6 Analytics, Adam Grossman, is back with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We'd love to connect with you. Join us at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. I think one of the things we've got to get into tonight, making big-time headlines, was one of the world's highest-spending advertisers, and that's Procter & Gamble. And they've called out media buying in terms of the industry and asked them to be more transparent. What are they talking about?
Yeah, I think this is something that your listeners would maybe understand, even on an intuitive basis, right? And this is something we're talking about with the Super Bowl commercials, is what the CMO, the chief marketing officer of Procter & Gamble, was saying is, because I don't understand, and because what's typically called rights holders, but like the television channels or teams or leagues or events, because, or advertising agencies, because they don't clearly say how value is being created, it is impossible for companies to see if advertising is effective or not. At a fundamental level, I think this makes sense. You know, if you're looking at the Super Bowl and all you saw is the score at the end, how would you know exactly what happened, or how would you know exactly what plays caused the Super Bowl to happen? What plays, you know, how would you know that Tom Brady came back in the second half? And, you know, what was the score ahead of time? And not being able to see how everything is put together, and not being able to see the full valuation, makes it really hard for these large companies who are spending, you know, millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars on advertising, and they don't know the value that they're getting, and they don't know necessarily where to start. So it's something my company does. My company focuses on creating these types of transparent valuations so people can actually see what's going on. You know, you don't see the end of the game result, but you can see what's happening in the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, to use the football metaphor.
That was the CEO of Block 6 Analytics, Adam Grossman, joining us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Time to wrap it up. Big thank you to all of our guests. Don't drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports. The Big E Sports Show, right here at the next generation of sports, SB Nation Radio.